When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Tercero y 15 para Pittsburgh. El balón en la yarda 31 sería un gol de campo y unas 49 yardas. A pasar Pickens. 4 pone presión. La boya, la boya presión. El pase largo al centro. ¡Pickens! ¡Pickens a Pickens! Pickens es un touchdown para Pittsburgh.
Repite la dosis de hace prácticamente dos semanas.
La misma ruta.
Trayectoria de poste arrancando en el slot del lado derecho. Y solito Pickens aparece en las diagonales, Jorgito. ¡Ah, qué sonrisa tienes! Espectacular.
Wow, and I knew every word that you were saying there, Alvaro Martín. From our Steelers Spanish game day broadcast. And by the way, I think it's upon you that you must sing happy birthday in Espanol to Max. It's his 41st birthday.
Now we're talking.
Come on, Alvaro. Let's put it together here. Let's do it.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Cumpleaños feliz. Te deseamos a ti. Cumpleaños, Max Starks. Cumpleaños feliz.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
There we go. Thank you.
Boy, you really outshined Wes and me.
I sounded just like I did when I hit 40. Oh, wait a minute. Max hit the fourth floor. My goodness, he's 40 years old.
Yes. Yes, I am in a distinguished club now, the 40 over 40 club.
AKA the survivors.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I'm winning the survivor pool right now.
So, young man, what have you accomplished in your life? I'm breathing.
Yeah, exactly. Stood up this morning, could see my toes. We're good.
That's always – yeah, but that's not fair. Your feet are so long, man. Come on.
That is true. Listen, it's all about perspective, Wolf. I can see my toes. That's all we need to focus
that's
on.
That's all we need to focus on, indeed.
Does not matter that they're size 19s and they stick out like boat skis. It does not matter.
Every year he buys a shoe a larger size where he can keep saying that. I can see my toe. I can see the tip of my shoe.
I can see it. If I see it, I can believe it.
I know they look like the shoes of a court jester, but, I can still see the tip of my
shoe. Oh, exactly. I love it.
I might be exploring the Northern Hemisphere, but, it's all good. Snowshoes are good.
I got to tell you, though. Max has been working so hard. Max gets out of that broadcast position and goes down to the field and then he's up again and then he's catching a flight. Then he's doing the whatchamacallit bowl and then he's doing the other bowl and then he's doing the playoffs. He's busy. He's hustling.
He is.
Yeah. I don't stop. And apparently because we didn't make the playoffs, I'm now still going to the playoffs because I got Jacksonville and the Chargers this weekend.
Well, there you go. So you're still going to be getting your air miles in.
Yeah, air miles still fully engaged. And, of course, there is a San Francisco game, which is a lot closer. But apparently I'm needed on America's First Coast. So I'll be going to Jacksonville clear across the country.
Duval.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Right, Duval.
All right, Alvaro. We're putting a wrap on the season all week long here. Is Mike Tomlin called putting a bow on it? Is it a wrap or is it a bow? I mean, because I tend to think with Mike, you got to put a bow on the end of the season. Certainly, the beginning of the season wasn't so good.
Well, he's got to get the scissors first. He's working his way towards wrapping and bowing, but he's going to take his time. And he's always taking his time, particularly with coaching decisions. They don't come quick.
Right.
So he does take his time. I have to say that I was going to bring up that one of the points, and we're not in there, of course. It could well be the players themselves. But one of the things that strikes me about this season is some of the development of certain players. Again, it could have been up to them. But you get a sense, and you guys would tell me, that there was some coaching involved. I mean, I'm thinking of guys that probably had career years or near career years. Cameron Sutton, Mason Cole, Pat Freiermuth, Minkah Fitzpatrick, believe it or not, as good as he is, Alex Highsmith, Cam Hayward. Let's not even talk about the youngsters, you know, who are just coming in as freshmen. They have nothing to have another year to compare. You're looking at players that had either their career years, including some of the vets, or near career years. Now, maybe the team needed that for them to get to 9-8. So they just put it out there because the team was desperate. But there were some new coaches in the staff, and you saw this happen, and that's very encouraging, particularly when you think the kind of 180 they did at the bye week, where I actually did the run a little just look at the numbers, and I'm not going to bore you with numbers, Greg, but out of the first 8 games, in 7 of them, they attempted more passes than they had carries.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 9 games, they had 7 of them where they rushed more than they passed. So this is a 180. This is a complete change of orientation, philosophy, identity. And they did it in season. They had to. To be honest, they had to. It wasn't working. What they had wasn't working. But they hit on the right note, and they ended up doing well. And to me, that also speaks to coaching. That's the other bit of evidence I'm going to throw in there, that some of the new names in the coaching staff, I mean, again, I have no idea if they were responsible or if the players took it upon themselves. But I'm thinking Pat Meyer. I'm thinking Grady Brown, Brian Flores, Terrell Austin in a new role, and Mike Sullivan, just to name a few. Again, they may have not done anything themselves, but you got a sense that they were involved in this whole change of orientation and settling down of roles and what Mike Tomlin calls a division of labor and the focus of what you have to do. So I think when you look at the season, that is something to note about the season. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to do that. Not a lot of teams do that.
No, and the success of the running game is directly related to, again, getting more reps, but it's also Pat Meyer getting the hogs, doing what they're supposed to do. They were doing it. It takes a while, as we've been talking about. Max, from the get-go, said it's going to be 6, 7, 8 weeks before you understand, when we were coming out of training camp, where this line is going to be, because it takes some time. And you couldn't have been any more spot on, Max, than you were in that moment.
Well, and I think, Wolf, I mean, but we've been in those moments, right, where you're the new guy in a line, or you're the guy accepting the new guys on your line. And so it's a special amount of time that it takes for all of us to get on the same page. And so I just simply, you know, wanted to make sure that we tempered those expectations, because like, of all the positions you could put out there on the football field, like, O-line's the only unique one where all 5 have to be on the same page, right? You can freestyle at other positions. You can do something individually that can be spectacular and work out for the good. You can't do that as an offensive lineman. I can't say, you know what? I was going to block the DN, but you know what? That safety, I feel like if we get up to that safety, man, he could pop it all the way. So I'm not going to block this DN. I'm a run to the safety instead. You can't do that. You know, because the quarterback's laying down, looking at the sky, wondering, why am I here right now and not looking downfield? So, you know, it takes time for that synchronicity, and everybody has to, you know, be on that same page. You have to understand it. So, I mean, for Pat Meyer and that crew to just stick with it. And like I said, no injuries as well. I think that was the other thing. We kept the same lineup out there. It wasn't like we had guys rolling in and out of the lineup like you see a lot of teams where they're rolling through offensive linemen. Guys are on IR. You know, they stayed together. They had some bumps and bruises along the way, but nothing significant that really kept them out of the lineup from playing in games. And that's, I think, what really ended up being the true testament was the time accrued on the clock for those guys.
It was the only NFL team that had the same five starters and essentially had the same crew the entire season. Everybody else had injuries and things to deal with. Pittsburgh was lucky that way. But again, I go back to when you made that comment, Max. You may have been the only person that was willing to bet on that offensive line. When they were 2-6, I mean, how many people said, you know what? With this offensive line, we're going to bet the rest of the season. We're going to run more than we pass because we think they're built for that and they're up for that. Not a lot of people really saw that. I'm sure they saw that in the building because they made the change. But, boy, it took some guts from the outside. You think, wow, that took some guts. What do you think? You think that was that? It was that simple, that clear in your mind that that was the only way Pittsburgh was going to make sort of some kind of advance, some kind of move ahead in the standings?
Well, I think it had to be, Alvaro, I think it had to be that you had to keep hitting the grindstone because with any run game, like, you have to take those 2 yards, 4 yards, 0 yards, 6 yards until you finally crack the dam. And I think that was the biggest thing. Run game is a game of repetition, just like anything else. You've got to continually stick with it. You can't abandon it at the first sign of a negative play. Listen, Bruce Arians used to do that. B.A. would be like, all right, that was y'all's shot. All right, now we're going to the air game. And you're like, oh, God, we lost a run game because of one negative play. And, you know, Matt Canada realized you got a rookie quarterback. Like, what makes a successful formula? You have to be able to run the ball. You have to be two-dimensional because that rookie quarterback is going to get overwhelmed at some point. He's going to feel the pressure, and you need to alleviate that stress and not make every big play that he's going to have to throw third and 18, third and 11, right? You've got to get him into third and mediums, third and shorts, so you have a two-way go and you keep teams guessing to where they can't just either A, they want to load the box and now you're one-on-one, or B, they're dropping off in like cover eight, you know, and dropping eight guys and only rushing three. So you have to keep that two-dimensional personality about yourself. And the offensive line kept showing little glimpses that, hey, we're getting better about it. I'm sure Najee saying, hey, we can run the ball. Just keep at it as well. And Najee, you know, he admitted to it. He wasn't the best runner. He didn't trust him early on. And he had to have that kind of kumbaya moment with them during the bye week to make sure that he was there and that they understood that they could trust each other.
Exactly so. And the thing about the running game is you're never quite sure when it's going to break. You know, you can tell, and it depends on, you know, the score and the opponent and all that thing. But one of the beautiful things about it, it's like Rocky going to the body before going to the head. You know, you soften them up, you lump them up, you marinate their ribs, body blows. And you can see it when you take over in the second half. And you see these guys getting up to their feet slowly, starting to argue in the huddle. They're yelling at each other and things like that. And you know you're getting to them. You're starting to crack that rock. And all that does is it incites you more as an offensive line. The more you see the defensive guys start to, like, you know, kind of like melt down and start to you know, question each other and all that sort of stuff, you realize you're getting to them. And that's what the beauty of the run game is. It is so wonderful when you're in those moments when you know that you are just, like, in the second half against the Ravens. You see back in the day, Max, your day, when you're getting after the Ravens and you're body blowing them. And I tell a story all the time with Hines Ward and Chris McAllister, and he's blocking Chris McAllister, and McAllister says, hey, ease up. I don't want to get over and get in front of Bussy because Bussy's palpitating the Ravens in the second half. You know, I mean, that's the way it was done, man.
You know, we saw it this season. Pittsburgh goes to Indy. They've got Jonathan Taylor. He's fine. He's not on the injury list. And they don't use him. They start passing.
Yeah.
We saw it in Atlanta. They've got Cordarrelle Patterson. He was coming back from a 3-game layoff from injury. He was fine. They didn't use him. Mariota started the game by passing the ball. Then you saw Cleveland. I mean, I don't get Cleveland. All due respect. They've got a world-class stable of runners. Yeah. Nick Chubb may be the best runner in the league. But what do? They give him about 11 carries in the first half. That's fine. 5 yards a carry. And then at the end of the first half, they give up on it. Let's just – he's on the field, but he's out there one of the three wide receivers to the right. I just don't get it. And what the only explanation is that they're looking at that defense and saying, we can't run. We can't do it. Not against these guys. And they give up on things. They don't even try things against Pittsburgh. I think part of the 7-2 at the end of the season was just that kind of dumb luck that the other side decided not to pursue what they could have done, and they had as a great weapon. And again, credit to the Pittsburgh defense, what they were doing week to week to opponents. And I think people were walking into the game thinking, I don't know if I can run against this team. I don't know if I can run against Pittsburgh. Let's just have five wide and see what we can get. I don't get that. I thought it was Baker Mayfield changing plays or sort of influencing what they were going to do. Now I think it's more Kevin Stefanski. I just don't know why they went away from something that was so effective in the first half. They just went away from it. It wasn't that they were down, 10 points, 14 points. At some point they were, but generally speaking, they were close and they gave up on it. But that's good. We'll take that. Pittsburgh will take that any minute now. And if it's perception that gets you to do that, great. We need all the help we can get. But the question I have for you now is, when you look at that division and you still look at a potentially healthy Lamar Jackson, Joey B, and then you see Deshaun Watson with a year's preparation in preseason. I mean, when you look at that division, everybody ended up, 3-3? Yeah. When you look at that division, I mean, do you have the horses? Do you have the confidence to say, hey, first step towards anything in the playoffs or any championship or any confetti game, I love that expression, is to simply win your division? How will that be next year? I mean, do you walk away from the season? Do you walk away from the season thinking, we did something really extraordinary? We really did something that not a lot of people did, and it just gave this team a lot of confidence and an identity, really. Is that going to be enough in the NFL next year? That's my question. That's the question I'm sure that they're asking themselves in the first few days of the offseason.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Alvaro. It is something that when we look at the first half to the second half, the growth that was made. Because I think another thing, Alvaro, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, was this really a rebuild when you think about what the Steelers accomplished this season? I mean, can we really call this a rebuild? Do we call it a retool? Because you still finished above 500. You finished third in your division. But like all the reasons you just said, like, if all things are equal, I mean, where is that big dissemination? And how it also speaks to how good this division is when you stack it up against the rest of the NFL. And it's been like that since Tomlin's been in here. I mean, I don't think there's really been a lull. So, I mean, do you think we call this a full-on rebuild? Or is this just something where he just kind of retooled it? Would that be a better phrase?
I think retooling would be it, but I think reorienting would be really what happened
here.
There
we go.
They went away from a notion of how to win games within the same philosophy of trying to give the defense the biggest rest possible and the biggest lead possible to make them rest as much as they can, make them turn the ball over, force turnovers. So that philosophy hasn't changed. It's how you did that changed. And they did it within the season. But it didn't really – I mean, they topped it. You know, they had 3 points in that loss against Cincinnati, but I think they topped it 29 points. Is that going to be enough? Is TJ going to play 17 games every year the way he plays? Those are the kind of questions that they need to ask. Is this enough? Do we have another step up next year in efficiency, particularly in the passing game? You would think.
Yeah.
I would believe that, right?
No question.
We already saw that growth in just a half of a season. So those are the kind of questions. And I think when Tomlin says, I'm in the tricky business, that's the kind of tricky thing. It's how do you pick out the threats that matter in your decision making? What really happened, the trend lines that really matter, and what made those trend lines move, and what is indispensable and what's dispensable. Those are very tough decisions when you have a team like that. One item that you brought up, Max, about the opponent that was really one of the keys to the Pittsburgh season, I think, as far as we just didn't make the playoffs, but it was just a really inspiring season in many ways. And that is that there are very, very, very few incidents where Pittsburgh players, voiced or made clear their displeasure and be to that would rise to kind of an incident that you have to deal with. Speaks to the team's culture, speaks to the team's leadership. It also speaks to Mike Tomlin and what he allows and doesn't allow. But this team had every ingredient to start getting pointing fingers and getting a little talky and getting a little, you know, unnamed source and just vent some spleen. And it largely didn't happen, by and large, in a very difficult season. But that speaks to, again, leadership, culture. I think it also speaks to a sense of everybody related to the team. Everyone there knew the margin for error was negative, was zero. There was simply, you had to roll in the right direction and breathe at the right time and pull at the right time and lift the oar out of the water at the right time. There was absolutely no margin for error. And everybody played that way. That is a trait that will serve this young team well, particularly the offense. Really, the pressure they played all year.
I believe it, man. I think I really think this laid the foundation for the next generation to come, because you had to navigate the loss of a Hall of Fame quarterback. And let's face it, at all, you know, Ben was the center of the universe in the Steeler world. I mean, really. I mean, let's face it. That's the way it is. If you are that caliber quarterback, and he is, you know, that's a tough one to supplant, to replace, to come along and have a leader capable of delivering the mail, such as like Ben did for so many years. So I think we got our man. I think they've got, you know, a lot of progress was made this year. But, you know, I look forward to what will be next year. I mean, you got a lot of young people coming along, making big plays down the stretch. And there was none bigger than George Pickens and Cam Hayward. And, you know, the young guys were just out there doing stuff that, by golly, that's the new blood that you need.
And you have the philosophy at the end of Ben's career. It's let's try to bring some free agents to plug some holes. And it's just so we can extend the window, see where we can go with what's left of Ben's career. The new regime, which, again, the presence of two people on top would make some people jump in a team, didn't matter. It didn't have an effect at all. Everybody just focused on their business. But also now we have a team that has players that the team can build upon. In other words, players that are young in their rookie contracts, which are inexpensive contracts, and that maybe in the past the team may have said, you know, let's get someone a little bit more veteran here, a free agent. Now the team may be saying, you know what, we're sticking with the young ones. We're sticking with the young ones, and we're going to bring free agents judiciously in certain areas. But I think we're going to focus on developing our own. I mean, you see Mark Robinson, who at the very end of the season showed up, DeMar Leal, those players, Jaylen Warren. I mean, that's developing. It's talent, obviously. I don't want to minimize what the guys did.
But think about this, too. Think about this, too. While you're retooling, when was the last time the Steelers came away with two first-round draft picks?
Oof.
You know, I mean, generally that happens when you've crashed the season, you know, when things go downhill really bad. And it didn't. And this is a rebounding team with some draft capital, with some good young people coming on. My goodness, I'm kind of excited about next year.
You see, if you develop your own and they show that development, then you don't have to worry about bringing anybody in at a big ticket, at a big price. And that changes the dynamic of the team as well. So I think one of the most encouraging things about this season is development. Development, again, I don't know enough to know if it's the coaching or the players or both or a combination. I don't know where the line would be drawn. But this team now has also the confidence of plugging a player and knowing whoever you were coming in here, we're going to make you better and you will be better. And that is unbelievable. That really helps the team build. You don't have to worry about free agency. You don't have to worry about bringing people from outside. That is a significant 180, I think, that happened this season. And that's going to really bode well for team construction in the future, because you've got some big contracts on that team, and justifiably so. But at this point, you need to grab people, plug them, develop them, trust them, and then watch them grow. And that's what's happened this year. it's great. I mean, to see backups become starters,
right?
To see people that believe that you are a backup, and they prove at the end of the season, no, I am a starter. That's great. Every team wants that, and Pittsburgh had a whole bunch of stories like that this year.
Absolutely, Alvaro. Thank you so much. Thank you for the entire year. We appreciate you. We're going to miss
Alvaro.
Seeing you. Yes, all of us here, we thank you for being a part of the locker room, brother.
Oh, listen, it's been my pleasure, my honor, and just enjoy the offseason. And Max, take it easy. It's your 40th birthday, okay? Take it easy now.
Yeah, I know. Listen, I'm actually going to go shopping for the four-way walkers and get the little tennis balls on the bottom just to make sure I'm sturdy and get some New Balances and some – and maybe even some compression socks. I don't know. You know, there's not enough time in the day.
Right. Thank you, brother. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Alvaro. Take
care. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
All right, Matt. Great job.
Oh, man. That was the tremendous and ever so conversive Alvaro Martin.
Yes.
Who is the play-by-play for a Spanish broadcast of the Steelers games. It's always great talking to Alvaro.
It is. It is.
It's always, you know it's game day when you see him and Arturo. And we usually are in the lobby around the same time heading over to the game. So it's good to see those guys.
Hey,
all right,
hey, real quick, yep, before you throw it to break, a thank you as well, too. You know, I like to take the credit for the production side of this, but, you know, it was our fearless leader on the Steelers side of things, Regan Berube, who was the one who said to, hey, you know what? What do you think about having Alvaro on the show with those guys?
Oh, absolutely.
So so thanks to Regan as well, too, for suggesting that idea earlier in the season, because I think you guys will agree. That's been one of our best segments every week.
We love it. Absolutely
Love it, yeah. Alvaro's great, too. You know, it's always great not only to have a weekly guest, but then a weekly guest that's so great like Alvaro. That adds so much commentary, which is always
And he's
nice.
Multilingual. I can't even speak English for
exactly.
Crying out loud.
I've already had a bilingual birthday, you know what I'm saying, on one show.
Absolutely.
Got happy birthday saying to me in two different languages. This is awesome. All right, Wes, your job during the break is learn French. I need you to learn French so we can get the trifecta going. Yeah, there we go. All right, we're going to step aside while Wes takes a Rosetta Stone class, and we'll be back here in the locker room here on SNR and ESPN Radio.